We're here on our third and final case of oral argument today. Judge Brigham on my left and Judge Gabriel on my right. We have four cases submitted today, and this is the third one. The other one is not going to be submitted with oral argument. All right, let's call this third case.
Good morning, Your Honors. First of all, I want to thank the court for granting oral argument. So I haven't been here in about a year and a half, and I don't know if there's a trend or what, but I think it's good to have oral argument. A lot of transferred cases I've had lately, I've had no oral argument, and to the extent you're in judicial conferences can mention this to your colleagues, I would appreciate it. I think we need more oral argument, and we're getting a lot of cases transferred to other jurisdictions that I think it's better for the system to have oral argument.
You understand the Supreme Court is transferring those. We're not.
I understand the Supreme Court is, but they're not the transferee courts are not granting oral argument for whatever reasons. I'm just saying that I would like to see more oral argument. I think it's better for the system. The heart of this issue is there's two main issues I'm going to argue today. Is whether the trial court should have granted a charge, a jury charge, and an instruction after we contend that self-defense, defense of third persons, and necessity were raised.
Okay, why don't we just go right to the elephant in the room, okay? Let's just get right to it. Let me read from the transcript.
Sure.
When Sergio was running to the ice house, what was Roberto doing? He was following him. Did he have the knife in his hand when he was following him? Yes. Where did they go? To where that thing where they get ice. All right. Is this where Sergio ran to? Yes. Where Roberto chased him to? Yes. Did you see what happened when the two of them arrived at the ice house? I just saw Roberto was doing this gesticulation with the knife and that Sergio was going back. That's all I saw. So he chased him down away from the car. Now, that's an elephant. How do you get around that for purposes of self-defense and necessity?
Well,
or defense of third persons.
I think as we talk about scintillas, whatever those are.
Two peppercorns, I think.
Two peppercorns. And the two peppercorns we have are back at the car. Okay. Sergio has lost it. He is pounding on the glass hard enough to break it.
Yeah, back at the car.
Scaring everybody in the car.
Absolutely.
Does that mean as a matter of law, when Roberto gets out of the car and starts chasing him, that as a matter of law, he has no right or no thoughts in his brain that he's got to do something to stop Sergio from being the aggressor? And I guess that's the second elephant in the room. I mean, to me, it's at least raised by the evidence, and a juror could decide whether or not it was necessary self-defense to prevent imminent harm because Sergio had lost his temper, was trying to break the glass, was angry because Delcia would not go home with him, and was just really being an extreme aggressor along with his friend. So does that mean with obviously all the alcohol and everything that was going on that day that from the shoes of our client, Roberto Sanchez, that he didn't think that he had some necessity to do something about it to keep Sergio from coming back and causing damage?
Well, you don't consider the alcohol.
I understand. But I'm just saying the key is you have the deceased has been an extreme aggressor, is threatening.
Has he used deadly force, though? Is pounding on a window deadly force that justifies someone else pulling a knife and stabbing you?
Okay, the key is we also raise necessity. I understand that basically all we're saying is it should have been submitted to the jury, that it was raised by the evidence. And we think as a matter of law, it was at least raised, the charge was requested, and it was denied. And that's the simple part of the argument. The other point I want to argue is the fact that during questioning, the district attorney asked whether or not Sergio was an illegal alien. And to me, that becomes another elephant in the room. I mean, how do you cure that?
Now, it wasn't agreed, objected to.
Should have been objected to, and that's the better practice. But is it fundamental error, and do we have fundamental error anymore? I mean, when a DA asks a question like that, how do you clean that up? I mean, you could have objected. You could have had an instruction, a motion for mistrial. But the key is, it was so bad, from our perspective, that mistrial was about all that could happen at that particular point. And the judge, our position would have been, even if they'd gone through that process of objecting, asking for an instruction, and moving for a mistrial, the only thing the judge could have done and should have done was grant the mistrial. So if you're already at that point, just the fact that they asked that question, it was a question that just should not have been asked. And I think the state, I hope, I believe, must be conceding. The only argument that they have, I could see in their brief, was it wasn't objected to. Apparently, if it had been objected to, I don't know what the state's absolute position is, but they have not argued that that was not some kind of fundamental error, that it simply
wasn't
objected
to. There are plenty of cases where somebody's been asked a question similar to that, such as concerning prior convictions or very damaging testimony, and there's been an instruction to disregard, and that instruction has been held to be sufficient under the circumstances.
This
the
was
trial
a little,
court wasn't given a chance to do that.
I think this was a little bit different, though. I mean, it wasn't just a matter of prior convictions. This is really basically an alienage question, which I think takes it into a completely different category. And when you get into a category, basically, this guy's an illegal alien. I mean, as soon as that comes out of their mouths, that should be stopped with a mistrial right then. I don't believe you can do a cure with an instruction. I just don't think so. I mean, that's our position. I think it's just it was a severe, basic mistake. It was just as basic as if they'd have called him some other racial epithet or something of that nature. And the only way that you're going to cure this kind of stuff is say, it's fundamental, with or without an objection, you've got to grant a mistrial, you've got to give a new trial and reverse the case. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Simply with respect to the three jury instructions issues. On self-defense, there are four different reasons outlined in the state's brief why self-defense wasn't proper in this case. The chief among that is there's nothing in the record to give a scintilla of evidence about the defendant's own mental thought processes at the time. And that's a requirement. Before you can get instruction on self-defense, you have to have some evidence brought forth that establishes the defendant's own frame of mind.
How would the defense do that without calling his own client?
In this case, both Ingrid and Delcia testified. They were the cousins of the appellant. Right. Both of them testified about the appellant confessing committing the murder. In fact, Ingrid went so far as to testify that when the appellant got back in the car, he said it felt good to kill someone. So obviously, both Ingrid and Delcia were aware of the defendant's state of mind. The defense attorney could have asked questions of them, brought forth, you know, did the appellant seem agitated? Did he seem fearful before he got out of the car? None of those questions were asked. We have no insight into the defendant's frame of mind from the trial. And absent that, a self-defense instruction is not proper. It's also improper for the defense of third persons for the same reason. On the defense of necessity, as you pointed, as the court has already pointed out, once the appellant exited the car, confronted Sergio, and Sergio took off running, the immediate threat was dissipated. It was gone. It was over. And then the appellant himself became the aggressor, chasing after Sergio with the knife and stabbing him.
Do we look at that from an objective standpoint or from the standpoint of the actor?
The jury is supposed to look at what a reasonable...
No, as to whether or not the charge should have been submitted.
Which charge, Your Honor?
Well, necessity, third person's defense.
The jury is supposed to look, I would assume, at a reasonable person standard because they've got to determine whether...
Now, do we, what from whose eyes do we look at it to see if it should have been included in the charge?
There is, you just glean from the record if there is any scintilla of evidence from which the jury could have reasonably concluded that self-defense was proper. And if so, then the instruction would have been required. But here, there is none of that in the record. There just isn't any. With respect to the last issue regarding the motion for mistrial, it wasn't preserved. The case law is clear. Absent a request, the failure to sua sponte grant a mistrial is not error. This is not structural. This is not fundamental error. If you'll recall from reading the testimony of several of the witnesses, both Ingrid and Delcia were originally from Honduras. They had already related that their cousin had immigrated before them. And so it was brought out in the context of, you know, who was here properly, who isn't here properly. The appellant's alienage did come out. That is unfortunate. But it's not the type of error that is so structural that could not have been cured by a simple instruction to disregard. It was merely a moment in passing. It was not played upon during the closing arguments. It wasn't emphasized through other witnesses. Finally, with respect to the autopsy photograph, it's one among five. It's no more gruesome than the others. And Dr. Pirwana used it to explain the medical cuts on the victim's arm. If there are no further questions, I'll yield my remaining time to the court.
Further questions?
Right, thank you, Your Honors.
Anything further, Mr. Henderson? Perhaps I should have said donkey in the room in deference to you, Mr. Henderson, but I didn't. So.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I find it interesting that we got Judge Brigham, he wanted to go from the county bench to the appellate bench, and we have people that want to go from the appellate bench. I can't figure it out sometimes, but at any rate.
There's too little of this, Mr. Henderson. When you talked about oral argument, there's too little of this.
I agree. Scintillas are not much, and peppercorns aren't much, but we think that we did produce them in this particular case, and we were entitled to the charge for the jury to at least have ruled on the, had at least to consider whether they thought there was a necessity, that there was self-defense, etc. Also, we think that once, what was the purpose of asking that question as to whether or not they were legal or illegal? That's strictly to inflict some kind of bias or prejudice, and it's a severe thing, and it's one that should not be taken lightly. So we think that once that question was asked, right then mistrial was the only remedy, and there was just no way to make a cure, and there couldn't have been any other reason to ask it. And I mean, state has said that it was in passing, but what relevance does that have other than to inflame the minds of a jury? And the only, I mean, the judge sua sponte, in our opinion, should have granted a mistrial right on the spot for that.
And do you have any cases to support your position that a question such as that, not necessarily that exact question, can rise to the level of fundamental error such that an objection is not required to preserve it?
Well, there are a line of cases, and I don't know if I cited them in this particular brief. I usually do. I haven't looked back at it. But there are some cases where we talk about the skunk in the jury box where it's so fundamental that once it happens, an argument or whatever, that it's that's it. There is no cure. We have a long line of cases that say anything that has to do with racial bias, that is fundamental error. So our position is, if you want additional briefing, I can do it, but our position is that once you ask a question like that that's designed to inflame the minds of the jury, it's too late. And you have just got to grant a mistrial. You've got to stop that type of questioning and that type of conduct in its tracks. No further questions, I'll yield my time.
All right, thank you, Mr. Henderson.
Thank you.
Thank y'all for your coming today, and your case is submitted.